Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Chuck Riddle, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. Chuck, this is a return engagement for you to come on my show. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason.
Well, last time we spoke, it was 2012, so it's been more than 2 years, which is hard to believe. But at the time, I think your big project, FDSIS, was launched for a couple years at that point. But things were working really well, I mean, in terms of the network handling the traffic. Now I'm sure you're getting much more traffic, much more interest in using your digital services. So let's just talk some behind-the-scenes stuff. What improvements have you made around FDSIS over the last few years? And what are your plans for the platform, you know, going forward?
Well, for those that don't know, FDSIS, as a quick reminder, is sort of a one-stop shop for government information, making sure that it's authentic, verified government information for all the branches of government. So it's a pretty neat concept. And as you mentioned, since we launched it, the traffic just continues to go up. We get over 23,000 visits a day and more than 250,000 visits a year. And actually, recently, we went over the 1 billion document retrieval mark, which is a big deal for us. And the other thing to mention, too, we're getting ready to release the Warren Commission report of the Kennedy assassination issue, and we expect there's going to be a huge amount of demand on that. So the traffic continues to go up. We've been on the back end of it, making sure that we've got enough network and the hardware infrastructure to support the demand for FDSIS, which is a good problem to have. And we're in the process of rolling out what we call the next-gen FDSIS, which we think is going to give it slightly a more clean look, simpler interface to make it easier for people to get information back. We're also going to be updating the search engine, which is going to allow for some linked content when people search for things on that. And we're still trying to figure out how to implement cloud with that, either on the storage side and then also on virtualizing more of FDSIS so we can make it as lean and as efficient as possible. But it's a good problem to have, and the demand just continues to go up.
So I want to go back to the new version or the simpler interface. You talked about an updated search engine. Is there a time frame around that? And then how are you doing that? Give me some of the technical aspects of that effort.
First of all, on how we're doing that side of it, we're standing up a brand new system alongside the current system, and we're in the process of doing that now. Brand new hardware platform, brand new components of the system, if you will, so that we're hoping to roll that out sometime next year to replace the current interface. It'll be a seamless transition. It'll be one day it's the old FDSIS, the next day it's the new updated FDSIS. And in terms of how we're doing it, we've really relied a lot on querying our user community out there, the library community, the big users of FDSIS, to find out what changes they'd like to see us make. And we've incorporated that into what we're delivering in what we call the next-gen FDSIS. So I think it's going to be a nice update. And it's also going to be more mobile-friendly. You know, one of the things about FDSIS that's really nice is that you can search for just about any government document on it, but the system right now is not as mobile-friendly as we would like it. This next-gen FDSIS will definitely make it more mobile device-friendly so that whether you're searching on, you know, an iPad, an iPhone, or Android device, it's not going to matter. It'll help you get that content where you need it.
As you're designing this, as you're querying your users, is that something that they came to you with, or is that just, you know, where we are with mobile, the mobile evolution, it's just you have to do it. You don't really have a choice.
It's probably a little bit of both. Something that we had in the life plan for FDSIS that we wanted to continue to evolve it and adapt it, but also based off of the, you know, how things are becoming more mobile, we definitely wanted to incorporate that into the next release and then make changes as we go to make sure that we're meeting what our customers are asking for.
The other thing that you talk about is as you move to new hardware, new platform, you mentioned the cloud, and I know we'll talk cloud later because that's a thing every CIO is looking at. Is there a move to the cloud now and then, or is this going to require a secondary move after this? Because a lot of times when people upgrade, go to something called next generation, the cloud works its way in right away.
It's not going to be part of the release, let's say, for next gen FDSIS, but it's something that we plan to weave in over time to figure out which components we can leverage cloud for and which things we can't. So it's definitely on the blueprint. It's just a matter of when we get to that and when it makes sense to do that for FDSIS.
Is there something that is stopping you from going now? Is it a cost issue? Is it a security issue? Or is it just the way things are set up, it just doesn't easily go to cloud right away?
I think it's more something we just have to be careful to make sure we're updating it the right way to leverage cloud and figuring out exactly how cloud can benefit FDSIS rather than just making changes to it to implement cloud just for the sake of implementing cloud. We don't want to do that, of course. And, you know, I think all CIOs are looking at ways to try to leverage cloud where it makes sense and securely makes sense, because we don't want to take any risks that we shouldn't be taking.
Another initiative last time we talked was using the concept of agile development, obviously, to improve both FTSys and more broadly GPO's network and IT systems. Talk about the agile maturity and the use of that over the last few years. And obviously, this is, again, another concept a lot of CIOs are going down that path. Has there been any obstacles or roadblocks you've had to overcome?
It's definitely a different way of doing things. So we definitely started down the path of agile for certain projects. It's not as widespread as the old way of doing things through the waterfall approach, the more traditional ways of doing software development. We're trying to get people understanding what agile actually is so that we can start doing that for new projects as they come up. And it's sort of a slow process. One of the things that we're trying to get set up for next year is to get training for the staff that does project and program management to make sure they really understand agile. So we're bringing in some training resources inside GPO to help people understand what it is and where it makes sense and where it doesn't make sense. You know, it's definitely a good way to do projects, but you have to make sure people understand what it is so you get the benefit doing it rather than just force fitting it into place.
Because of the way software development's going, the trends that we're seeing, are you at all just using Agile but calling it by a different name? I mean, there's modular contracting, there's Agile, you can call it whatever you want. But, you know, for instance, the next generation FTSys that we just talked about, is that has an Agile component to it?
It does have an Agile component to it, absolutely. And you're right, there's different ways of thinking of Agile. I like to think of it as iterative development, where you're delivering things quickly and letting people feedback of what they're seeing, make sure that's the right fit, and then you're taking that, putting that into place, and adding to it, sort of a snowball effect. So we are doing it probably more than I realize. It's not traditionally called Agile, but it's sort of a new way of doing business that you almost have to be doing now, because, you know, the user community doesn't want to wait, you know, 12 to 18 months to see something. They want to see it as soon as they can, figure out if that is what they're asking for, and then you build on that and continue down that path.
Now, you talk about the training a little bit, and I think, again, a lot of CIOs are heading down a similar path for training. How are you going through the training? Is it private sector training? Are you looking at, for instance, the Federal Acquisition Institute? Give me a sense of how you're making that work.
Yeah, well, we're going to bring in in-house training to train GPO employees. We have a group within GPO that helps to facilitate getting training for us, whether that's in-house or hiring outsiders to come in and teach folks at GPO. So we're going to be bringing in a specific group of folks to help us understand what Agile is all about and train through what we call the GPO Workforce Development Program.
You already have some people on staff today who are doing Agile. And for instance, I know you have things like Lean Six Sigma, and they do black belts and green belts and all the different kind of levels. Do you have something similar with Agile today? Or are you guys starting, I want to say ground zero, because I don't think anyone ever starts at ground zero, but you're trying to bring everybody up together, meaning, you know, the entire staff?
Yeah, I'd say it's more on that than the other. We're definitely, I wouldn't call us an advanced Agile shop. We probably have pockets of expertise out there, and we definitely want to build on that.
All right, something else obviously to follow up with you with as we go forward. I want to just talk one last priority that from a few years ago before we have to take a quick break. One thing you talked about was the status of your network and IT systems upgrade. You mentioned VoIP. You mentioned VDI as two technologies you were beginning to implement. Where are we with those two technologies and other network upgrades?
For the voice over IP for our phone system, we've definitely made some progress since we last spoke. We've expanded that to all of the GPO regional offices, 14 locations around the country. And having that standard phone system in place has helped us in ways I don't even think that we imagined in the beginning. We've actually been able to leverage that now and use it as an internal emergency broadcast system if there's issues going on in the building. So having that VoIP system in place helps us to do that. So we've definitely capitalized more on VoIP since we last spoke. We've been upgrading the bandwidth, as I'm sure everybody else is, so that we can continue to meet the network demands. On the VDI side, we probably backed off that for a little bit. We focused more on desktop standardization, trying to make sure that we've got everybody on the same image. And there's something I'll be talking about here shortly with Office 365. Our focus has shifted a bit away from VDI for now and focused more on cloud technologies elsewhere. So it's not dead. I wouldn't call VDI as a dead concept for us. We still do some of it, but not quite as wholesale as we had planned a couple years ago.
Now, as the reason why, did it just get overcome by other events, for instance, the need for cloud, the need for email consolidation? Or did you realize maybe the technology just wasn't right for GPO today or at that time a couple years ago?
Probably a little bit of all of that. I think that we realized that there are ways for us to deliver functionality faster that would be more immediate benefit to our employees, that VDI is sort of a longer play for us. And we realized that we couldn't do both at the same time. We can only focus on so many things at one time, and realized that VDI, it may continue to make sense for certain use cases, but not the original plan that we had started down. And I think that there are ways to implement cloud that help us do some of the things that we thought we were going to do with VDI, but not to have to do it through that approach through VDI. It's something that, you know, I think it has some merits, but it's not a trivial thing to get into. And we definitely wanted to make sure if we did it, that we did it in a modular fashion and made sure that we could support what we were trying to deliver with VDI.
Interesting. Now, a lot of times when I hear CIOs talk about VDI, they talk about zero client or thin client. So I think that's something that's part of VDI, but obviously the way you're saying is, you know, that's something that's further down the road for you guys. Do I hear that right?
Yeah, it's further down the road. And at this point, we're sort of in a pause pattern, trying to figure out if it continues to be something that we want to do or not. And if some of the things that we're doing elsewhere with things like moving to the cloud might overtake that and make more sense for us instead of the VDI approach.
All right, very good. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about more of your older priorities. My guest today is Chuck Riddle, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest is Chuck Riddle, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Chuck, before break, we're talking about some older priorities. We talked about VoIP. We talked about the next generation of FDSIS and the changes that are coming there. But one other priority you talked about 2 years ago was a pilot that just started to get off the ground around mobile devices. So give me a sense, how is GPO using mobility today? Have you set up a mobile device management software, an app store? Just tell me where you're at.
Since we last talked, we've actually expanded our use of mobile devices. We've been able to deliver iPhones and iPads to certain users, which is a big change for us. And we have stood up a mobile device management platform. We decided to enable a cloud platform to help us support our mobile device needs. So all of our mobile devices are managed that way now. And in terms of looking at software applications, we're trying to go with a more mobile-first strategy like most government agencies and making sure that the things that we deliver new technology-wise are things that are mobile-friendly. So it's been a work in progress, and I think we're making good advances towards that and, you know, continue to move down that path.
You talk about certain people have iPhones, iPads, other types of mobile devices. Are these pilots now, or are these full production, so to speak, and who gets them and why do they get them versus anybody else?
To that end, we've actually upgraded, I think, all of our mobile devices over the last 12 months, whether it's the BlackBerries that we always had or the iPhones that we just recently introduced about a year or so ago. We've upgraded everything to make them more modern, if you will, and it's definitely moved past the pilot stage, and it's in a production state for a certain group of users that the iPhones or the iPads make sense to help them do their work.
And then you also said, you just talked about a mobile device, a cloud platform for an MDM. Talk a little bit about how that's set up. I'm not sure if I've heard of an MDM in the cloud before, so maybe give me a little more details on that.
With the mobile device vendors that we looked at, mobile device management vendors, that was an option that most of them offered, and in trying to make sure GPO is as lean as it can be, we definitely wanted to embrace that and be able to deliver that capability through MDM without having to host things in a traditional way. So it's worked great so far. I don't want to get into the specifics of it, but it's basically an interface that allows us to control things without having to host that application internally, and it's been able to support everything that we've been able to deliver mobile device-wise.
Now, these are all government-furnished devices. Are you guys heading down a path of BYOD yet?
Yeah, we looked at BYOD and decided it wasn't a great fit for GPO. So these are all government-provided devices.
Have you taken BYOD off the table totally, or is that something that, you know, maybe a year or two from now, as things kind of change, as technology changes, you can go back and look at it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for mobile devices, we've taken it off the table. It didn't make sense for our employees here. And it's not because of the technology. It's more because of the policy aspect of it. But I will say this, we do allow users to connect to GPO and do their work, if they're doing telework, from their home computer. So there is that aspect of BYOD. It's not the traditional way of thinking about it. As long as they've, you know, authenticated in, we do allow them to do certain things from home that they don't have to have their GPO computer to do. We just decided to steer clear of it for the mobile device side of it.
And I think a lot of agencies are following your path where you're saying, you know, it's just from a policy standpoint, from all the different pieces of the policy, whether it's how do you pay for it, what do you do if you lose it, you know, all those challenges, they're saying, you know, maybe it's just easier to continue down the path of a government-furnished device. You talked about telework and allowing people to work from home and doing certain things. I imagine that's through a VPN or some sort of, as you said, authentication process?
Right, exactly. Actually, they can come into a central site through the web and get authenticated that way. So they, once they do that, they have the option to either do certain things from their home computer in an isolated container, or to connect back into their GPO computer and do things as if they were actually sitting in front of the device. So that has worked out really well for us, and I think that the employees have been really happy with that capability that they didn't have before.
And can you talk a little bit about that capability? I mean, because that's interesting, because it's not just, it doesn't sound like a straight VPN. As you said, you either do it in isolation or you do it like you're connecting through your GPO. And when I hear that, it's like almost like the PC on a stick concept, where someone's sticking a secured thumb drive into their computer, and that's what everything's running through. Is it something similar to that concept?
Not quite. Actually, in speaking back to the VDI question, we were able to take one of the VDI components that we've been building up infrastructure-wise and be able to leverage that as a gateway to allow users to connect in, and then they authenticate using second-factor authentication through the VDI infrastructure, making sure that they're authenticated, we know who they are, and then they have an option once they connect in through our website to either connect into their device here on the network, or they can do certain things that we've allowed them to do through the existing virtual setup that we have. So it's not a full-blown VDI or operating system on a stick, sort of a hybrid approach of both that let us leverage something we had already stood up on the Citrix side of the house to be able to extend a telework capability where they didn't have to have their computer to do that. They were able to use their home computer to connect in.
Here we are entering the fall, and everyone's expecting a big stormy winter. I mean, are you preparing for more and more teleworkers to take advantage of the capability?
Absolutely. Last winter, for example, when the government shut down, because of that telework capability, if people weren't expecting the bad weather and they didn't bring their laptop home, let's say, they still were able to get work done because they could connect in that way. And that worked out really well for us. So I think that technology-wise, we can deliver a lot of things that the different business units in GPO can choose to embrace or not, depending on what their function is. But from a technology perspective, I feel really good about what we can deliver to allow folks to telework or to work to support things, not necessarily in a traditional telework environment, but let's say a COOP sort of setup where they have to provide services unexpected off-site. This same infrastructure helps us to do that as well.
Now, one thing that's just kind of occurred to me as you're talking through it, you used to have people in the basement, you know, running printing presses, and now everything's done really digitally. Does that change how many people telework or are able to telework or eligible to telework? And what does that do to you as the CIO to prepare for that uptick? But still, you have to make sure that the network, the capabilities are all there.
Absolutely. So that's why on the network side, we've just been assuming that there's going to be a huge amount of growth. We've planned for that, making sure that as the workforce changes, we can adapt to that and deliver services that need to be delivered to, let's say, a group of employees that didn't need them before. We've definitely tried to keep that in mind as we're building out capabilities to not just assume it's what we have now, but what's coming in the future. So you're right. As things change, as GPO becomes more digital, we don't necessarily need all those people working to produce the actual printed output. A lot of the work, probably about 75 to 80% of the work of the government printing office has to do with the pre-print aspect of it, the publishing aspect of it, to get content ready to publish, whether it's published in print or digitally. It's a lot of the same work that goes into that. So on that preparation side, you don't have to physically be here to do that work. And that's where us on the IT side, we want to make sure that we can make it as simple as possible for users to do their work from wherever they need to do the work.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to jump into some of your new priorities. My special guest today is Chuck Riddle, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest today is Chuck Riddle, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Chuck, we spent the first part of the show talking all about older priorities, stuff that when you were on the show back in 2012 that we talked a lot about. Let's jump into some new priorities. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
We're continuing down the data center modernization effort that we started a year or so ago and making efforts towards that, try to virtualize things, go towards a smaller footprint for our data center, and to even close down some of the unnecessary space that we've got. But a big thing that we're in the process of moving to right now is Office 365 for outsourcing our mail to the cloud. I know that for a lot of agencies that they've done this and this is old news, but for GPO, we're really excited about it because in doing that, we'll be the first legislative branch agency in U.S. government to make that move. And I view this as sort of a first step to a lot of other things that will come down the path once we make that move. We're in the process of migrating now and hope to have all that completed by the end of the fall. And at that point, all of our mail will be outsourced, and we'll also be able to do instant messaging for collaboration, something we've not been able to do in the past, voice and video desktop conferencing directly from that client, things that in the past it would have taken us a lot longer to deploy. Doing it through Office 365 is going to help us get there that much quicker. So, again, there's a lot to this. It's sort of a first step for us. It's going to open up sort of a gateway to other things down the road and help us leverage cloud more. So we're really excited about it. As I'd mentioned earlier, we kind of moved away a little bit from VDI. I feel like by outsourcing some things to the cloud like Office 365, it helps us to deliver some of those things that we thought VDI would help us do, but do it a different way. One of the great things about GPO is the agency leadership is really supportive of technology initiatives, trying to help make this agency transform itself to digital. And I've enjoyed a lot of great support to take steps like this for Office 365, and I'm excited about it.
Talk a little bit about that move to the cloud, because it's a big move. How many email clients or seats are you moving? And before, you're going from one email system to now just a cloud email, or are you going from something like, you know, 15 email systems to one? I know GPO is not that big, but give me a sense of the change.
So in terms of a numbers perspective, we're about 1,800 employees. So we're small by comparison to the larger agencies that have moved. I'm sure that you know, the USDAs or the GSAs of the world, they would view a migration like this in terms of numbers as really, really small. But it's more a paradigm shift, if you will, for the internal folks that have always supported email. We're not migrating or merging multiple systems. We've always had one system for email. But it's a paradigm shift in the sense that no longer do we have complete control over that environment. And we're ceding some of that control in return for being able to stretch our resources that much further and not to have to worry about the blinking lights, let's say, for the infrastructure and freeing up that staff to do other things that otherwise they would have been engaged in trying to continue to deliver email. So it's more of a paradigm shift on how we deliver these things and changing our approach than it is the numbers aspect of it. Because at the end of the day, 1,800 migrations is not huge, but it's a big deal in terms of how we get our work done and how we deliver our IT services.
I want to go back to the personnel issue, but before I do that, just let me get a sense. Have you had conversations with the GSA CIO Sunny Hashmi or USDA CIO Cheryl Cook or others in government who've done this migration? Even though, you know, 15, 20,000, 80,000 people is a lot, there's still lessons to be learned. Did you go looking for those lessons?
I absolutely did. I talked to anybody that would talk to me about their good, bad, and ugly of how the whole migration went. And I had a little bit of experience coming from USDA and how that migration went when USDA did it a few years ago. I was actually at USDA, so I remembered some of the pitfalls and the steps that we went through to make that move. And I remember how it was such a cultural shift to make that change. So, yeah, we definitely talked to as many people as would talk to us about, you know, what do we need to be concerned about and what are the gotchas. And I'd say so far the migration has gone really smoothly, probably because we knew some of the lessons learned from others to make sure we didn't step into those same potholes.
Interesting that I didn't realize you were at USDA back then, because that was the first big agency to really make the move into the cloud. Was there one or two things that you pulled from that experience to say, okay, we got to make sure that doesn't happen to us? Was it the culture change, the change management piece, or is it something around data and technology? Give me a sense of what you really focused on.
Yeah, I think it's more about the culture shift than anything else, because the technology part of our jobs as CIOs, I view as sort of the easy part. It's always how well these changes in technology affect people and taking a look at the infrastructure staff that supports things and making sure that they understand why we're doing it. I think that was a big part of the USDA move. You know, USDA had the challenge of taking all those different agencies and getting them all on one page to move to the cloud for email. That was a big shift for them. Luckily, on the GPO side, we didn't have to do that, but we still had to convince and explain to people, you know, on the technology side, why it's important to do this and how it's going to help us do more with less going forward. So I'd say that the cultural impact of it was probably the biggest lesson learned for me to help me, you know, prep the GPO side of things on how we were going to do it successfully.
You talk about people, the IT staff who no longer has to look at the blinking lights to make sure email's working. That's someone else's problem now. Does that also come in where you need more training? Are you shifting people away from email to work on other more difficult challenges that GPO is facing?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, GPO is a little bit unique because we're not a traditional agency that we get all of our money appropriated. We earn our keep, if you will. We run more like a business. So in terms of stretching our IT resources that much further, we really have to look for any way possible that we can do that. And if we can free up a resource that used to support, let's say, technology X to let them support technology Y and Z, all the better for us because it helps us, you know, stretch those people and get more with what we've got because we don't have the luxury of just adding resources to a problem. We have to really make what we have work to support what we're delivering. And, you know, GPO, while we're small, our mission never stops. It's a 365-day-a-year sort of thing, 24 hours a day. So those same people that have supported these things for years, they were big converts to get on board to say, you know, that they see how it can be done this new way and making sure that we weren't going to fail, you know, in the past where we could control it all ourselves. They had to be convinced that we would be able to be successful in this new approach by outsourcing certain things and making sure that if it, you know, if something happened, they had the they knew where to go to get it fixed quickly.
And I think that's the key. Set up the change management piece you talked about, the make sure that people have help desk support, they know where to find help desk support, because even if you're going from, if your current email setup is Microsoft Office, you know, Outlook, and now you're going to Microsoft Outlook in the cloud, so you think, well, nothing's going to change, something somewhere is going to change. And as long as people understand, okay, where do I go find that answer, that solves a lot of the initial problems that you may face. I mean, the data migration and the technology and all that other stuff, that will happen on its own. I mean, is that really where your focus has been?
I think so, because, you know, the technology is just changing so quickly. I wanted to take one core service as a starting step, let's say, to outsource, so that people could understand by doing that, we're not saying that, you know, we're not going to continue to provide things internally, but we have to be more choosy about the things that we choose to support in-house versus have somebody else provide it for us so that we can really deliver, you know, things quickly. Because you can't wait years to deliver things anymore because the cycle is months rather than years. And I wanted to make sure we were able to keep up with that curve with the limited staff that we have to do the work.
I mean, it goes back to our conversation earlier on agile development. I know that email could be considered the first of several steps of this broader collaboration, unified communications, whatever you want to call it, piece. So I imagine that's the way you're thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Once you get email set up, you've got a means to authenticate who you are, and it leads to other things like being able to take different environments, let's say like a development environment, and put that in the cloud, where once you've got that email in place and the ability to authenticate as an extension of your network, you can build on that and start adding other things to it in the future that if you didn't have that first building block in place, it'd be a lot harder to do. So it's a different way of doing things, but it was sort of a logical first step to get people comfortable with the idea, with the expectation that, okay, this is just a first step of many. So, you know, let's get comfortable with this so we can take the next step after that.
You mentioned several times shifting money, shifting resources, whether it's people or money, out of email and into other things. Do you have a sense of how much your savings you're going to get from moving email to the cloud or even cost avoidance?
I tried to look at it not so much from a cost perspective because I think that there will be some savings, but really the focus is on being able to deliver things faster and to deliver new technologies. So I view it as sort of cost neutral, but looking at it from the benefits that we gain by doing this and having to extend our resources to other things that otherwise we couldn't do and new functionality that otherwise we couldn't do. So, you know, I think that there is some cost savings, but I really don't want to focus on that. I think it's more about being able to deliver things faster and newer that would take us a lot longer to do had we just continued to manage things in-house.
Very good. I think that's a key piece to email in the cloud or whatever you put in the cloud that people sometimes lose sight of is not so much that, we're going to spend $50 less a person on email. It's actually we can take that $50 a person, put it into the new capability. So I think that's a great point to bring up. One of the other priorities you mentioned very early on in this beginning of this section of the show, you talked about data center modernization, virtualization, smaller footprint. Give me a sense of where you're heading with that. How many data centers are you trying to get down to? And again, benefits you're seeing already from some of the consolidations you've done.
GPO historically has had three data centers, and not the huge data centers in the sense of a lot of, you know, the larger agencies. But by doing this modernization, we're going to be able to shut down one of those and just focus on two data centers once we're done. And the focus has been on standing up a greenfield environment of the smaller footprint servers, a blade sort of technology, and virtualizing as many things as we can so that we can make sure we can support things in a much more flexible environment. So whether we continue to host things ourselves or move it to the cloud, once we've virtualized it first, it makes it a lot more flexible for us to take it elsewhere if we choose to do that down the road. So that data center modernization effort is again, sort of an internal let's get ready to be able to do a lot of other things down the road whenever we choose to do that. So it's gone really well, and I think that it's given us a lot of efficiencies gained with being able to spin up virtual servers quickly, where in the past we had to do the physical servers, and it's just, again, changing that mindset on how we do business and proving that it can work to deliver the same functionality that a traditional pizza box server would do, but in a different way.
My guest today is Chuck Riddle, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest is Chuck Riddle, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Chuck, before break, we talked a lot about your new priorities, moving cloud to the email, the first legislative branch agency really to do that. That's very exciting, as well as data center consolidation. Another push that's coming, I think, across GPO, but I think really falls on your shoulders a lot, is GPO's push to move to a bigger, a better digital platform. Obviously, we talked a little bit about earlier about how GPO, the stuff's not printed in the basement anymore. It's, as you said, pre-press stuff. Give me a sense of how your office is supporting that push to a more digital platform.
I view IT's role in that transition, that modernization, if you will, sort of being the foundation stone for everything that we do as an agency to try to make things digital. Those projects that I mentioned before with data center modernization and moving to the cloud for email, I think are building blocks, if you will, to help support the overall agency strategy to make things more digital. So we are definitely putting those building blocks in place and looking to modernize older applications, figuring out which things can be taken offline or replaced with something more modern so that, we're much more nimble and agile, if you will, in the traditional sense of the word, to support whatever the business needs are. Because, no longer is it as simple as just doing all the work just for printing things out. We have to make sure that we've got things in a format that can be produced in any media, whether it's print or digital. And I think we're foundational in all of that to make sure that we've got the good building blocks in place to support whichever way the agency needs to go to modernize and move forward.
Now, you talked about cloud email as one big thing. Once you get that in place, you can kind of build off that. What do you think needs to happen from a technology perspective to really continue this move to the digital platform? What's the next on your agenda?
Really, it's about modernizing legacy applications. We have a lot of things in place here at GPO that have run for a long, long time. We're talking 30 or 40 years. Things have, these applications have run consistently without any problem. They're reliable, but they're not necessarily modern in the sense of being able to output things in formats that really support today's world. So we're definitely, that's an ongoing process that, it's not going to be done in 12 months, 24 months. It's an ongoing thing that as the agency evolves, we're continually looking to try to find ways to make things more efficient and prioritizing which things to focus on first so we can take the next set of applications and make them more modern and responsive to what our needs are now. So I think it's a constant process to look at the applications, make sure they make sense, and figure out which ones we need to modernize first and which ones we can wait on and continually assess and reassess that to make sure that we're doing our job.
Now, how do you make that decision? Because I hear a lot of CIOs talk about application rationalization, which is obviously the idea of getting rid of apps or making sure all the apps are on the same version, so have some version control. But you're actually looking at the 100 or 50 legacy apps and say, here's the first five, here's the next five. How do you go about that process?
Yeah, well, I certainly can't do it in a bubble, that's for sure. So it requires a lot of interaction with the other business units to look at things from a holistic perspective and working with the strategic planning committee to say, okay, from an IT perspective, here's my view, and have them come back and say, well, okay, we understand that from a technology perspective, but here's our view from the business perspective. And then we talk together and try to figure out what does that mean in terms of an agency priority, what needs to get done first, and then try to lay those plans in place and take action on it. So it's not a one side or the other thing. They can't do it without me, and I can't do it without them. So it's one of those things that we have to continually talk about and look at and make sure that we have a plan and we're moving forward with that plan to modernize things. So it's definitely a team sort of view from a strategic perspective to make those changes for an agency.
The IT as a team sport, obviously, that's what came to mind as you were talking through this. A lot of people are talking about investment review boards or governance processes. I imagine that comes into it. Is that what you guys are doing, something very similar?
Very similar to that. We've taken a little further with IT in that we have a technology change control board, which I'm sure a lot of places do. But we've taken a view of there's specialized IT and there's enterprise IT. We don't have to manage all of it. So there may be things out there that make sense for it to run in a business unit, but if we don't manage it, we need to know about it. And we try to facilitate communications through that technology change control process to where if they're doing something out there that they're doing completely on their own, at least let us talk about it so we understand what our touch points are so that, you know, we'll continue to let you do what you do. And we're just making sure that we understand it so we can support it and secure it from a risk perspective. So it's definitely a team sport and definitely something that relies a lot on collaboration and communication to make sure that we're checking the boxes to cover things from an enterprise perspective.
Now, I heard a fascinating conversation about a month and a half ago at an FCA breakfast around shadow IT. And exactly what you said seemed to be there's a panel of four CIOs. Two, I think, were on the we want to know about it, but we realize they're specialized IT. One said, no, I got to control everything. You seem to sit with the other two CIOs who talked about, you got to let some flowers bloom, but you got to know which flowers are blooming. Is that a concern of your shadow IT? Because I think a lot more CIOs are starting to pay attention to it.
I think it's a concern in the sense that I need to know about it, but I'm not going to convince myself that I need to control all of it. Because for one thing, I don't have the resources to control all of it, nor do I have the expertise to control all of it. So I think that the days of being able to centralize all of IT under one business unit are probably long gone because technology has become so available, so consumerized, it's really difficult to say to business units that you can't do this and this. And you try to foster an environment where there's collaboration and innovation together, where we sit down and say, is this something that makes sense for you to do or me to do? And let's just make sure that we're working together to further the agency mission rather than saying we have to control it all, because I don't think you can do that anymore.
No, I think that's what I think a lot of CIOs are coming around to it. They just have to kind of establish that communication link. So when say, hey, I want to try this new application or this new technology, the CIO says, okay, here's the parameters you got to fit in. Now go forward. So again, the risk and security issues come into play.
Yeah, the risk side of it, I think, is the biggest part of it, because we want to make sure that everybody understands the risk components to it. We make sure that we validate it, from a security perspective to make sure we're not taking risks unnecessarily. Because the thing is, in that whole hybrid or sort of moderated, decentralized IT environment is that if it breaks and something goes bad outside of IT, the CIO is still the one that gets called on the hot seat to explain what happened.
Yes, we see that quite often on your friends on Capitol Hill. And even though you're part of their branch, they will not be any lighter on you than anybody else.
Exactly right.
Well, let's talk about one other new approach you guys are working on around. I would consider this maybe a big data project. It's the technology solutions for automatic web harvesting. It's a new pilot program. I think I read about it in a new strategic plan. Give me a sense of what this is about and how you guys are supporting it.
Not many people may know that GPO oversees, administers the Federal Depository Library Program. So that program's mission is to make sure that the American public has access to public government information. So this program that we've been doing on web harvesting is taking government websites that before they go offline and just disappear from the grid, we can go harvest that information and make a virtual copy of that site and continue to make it available when an agency shuts a website down. And it's a really neat concept because it basically can archive everything and throw it into what we call the Wayback Machine and let people go out there and look at sites that might have been turned down, 3 or 4 years ago as if they were still live today. So it helps to make sure that information that agencies deem as important that they don't want to forget about, but they don't want to continue to host, let's say, we have a way through this Wayback Machine to continue to provide that. And since we announced that a while back, we've actually taken it from a pilot program to it's in production now. So we're actively doing it. And it's an exciting concept. It's a cool technology. If you go out and look at it, you can go look at certain sites that you could not find if you Googled it, but you go through the Wayback Machine and it's as if it's still live today.
So are we going to look at some Netscape sites? We're going to look at some early green screen sites? What are we seeing?
I don't know that we've gone back that far, but I suppose we could. I think it's a little bit more modern sites that have been harvested and made available out there, but I'm sure that if there was a need for it, we could probably look at being able to go way, way back and do that. But there's so much content that comes up and offline with government today. I think there's plenty of work to do just on the more recent things that get turned offline.
It's interesting you talk about going way back. You're only talking about the late 90s, early 2000s, but still, from a technology perspective, that seems like decades and decades ago.
Exactly.
We are almost out of time. Before I let you go, there are a couple other issues I want to make sure we touch upon. First thing is your office itself. You talked about the changes in terms of no longer we need people necessarily to work on technology X, in this case email, but maybe work on technologies Y and Z. At the same time, GPO is one of many agencies that's facing a round of buyouts. You guys, I think, announced it earlier this year. Is this affecting your office, the makeup of your office at all? Give me a sense if your office is changing.
Yeah, it will affect IT. It'll affect all of GPO. So we're going through that right now. So just like I'd said earlier about how we have to run like a business, this is another element, I think, of running like a business. We have to be as lean as possible to continue to get our work done. So when we look at something like buyouts, it's just a fact of life that we have to deal with and adapt and evolve and try to move forward, maybe sometimes with less resources than we had before, because the workforce is changing, and we're continually adapting to that.
And from an IT standpoint and from a budget standpoint, can you give me a sense of your IT budget for 2014?
The budget for us has pretty much stayed static. As I mentioned, we get a lot of support from the senior management team to invest in IT. We haven't seen a decline in that. We just really focus hard on trying to prioritize the projects that we have to make sure we're not spending where we shouldn't be. So it's thankfully we've stayed pretty steady line on the IT spend of the equation.
Are you comfortable roughly saying, is it more than a $10 million, more than $50 million? Can you give me any sense like that?
Yeah, ballpark wise, it's somewhere under the $50 million mark. Rather not get into specifics, but by no means are we. We're probably in that mid-sized IT range in terms of supporting the agency's mission.
All right, good. Because I know, as I said, a lot of vendors listen to my show, and that's good. That's what they're interested in: money and opportunities. Which actually leads us to our last question of the day. I always like to ask CIOs. Vendors again. They're going to come bug you. They hear cloud. They hear mobility. They hear all the good buzzwords. What should they know about working with your office? Should they call you? Should they email you? Should they leave you alone? Give me a sense.
Well, it's probably somewhere in the middle on all of that. I'm not a big fan of cold calling, so please don't cold call me. But we are open to ideas. So if you've got points of contact in the technology side of GPO that you think you've got something you want to really try to further, work it through your points of contact and email us. We'll consider it. But just don't cold call us, because we're trying to focus on more with less. And honestly, we probably wouldn't respond as quickly as you'd like if you just call us out of the blue like that.
All right. Very good. I think that's great advice. People need to understand how best to work with you. And I can't think of a better explanation than you gave it. Unfortunately, though, we are out of time. We could probably have talked a little bit longer. But my guest today, Chuck Riddle, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. Chuck, thank you so much for being a return guest on my show. We'll have you on sooner than 2 years. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jason. My pleasure.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website. Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.